College football nerds, we are here talking NIL, name, image, and likeness. We argue with y'all all the time on Twitter, so we thought we'd have a video to point to that really articulates how we feel, what we think about everything that's going on, because we are a little analytical and somewhat critical by nature, and it comes across, I think, to some of y'all that we're against these guys and gals making something for themselves, making a little side money or whatever, or a lot of side money. And we're not against that. So we want to walk you through sort of how we feel about it. And maybe really the overarching theme of this video is we want to protect the sport and we want to avoid unintended consequences. And the thought that the things that we keep hearing are all the positives and all the cheering, and we think that that's maybe blinding people a little bit to some potential unintended consequences. So before you get at us in the comments, because I know you're ready to let us know how we don't care about the players. We really do. We care about all the players, not just a few at the top. So we're going to talk through this with y'all. So first things first, we're not against NIL in any way. We have another video that happened way before all this where we talked about some ways that we could do it. We want to talk about how this is different from pro sports and how this could be potentially exploited. So that's going to be kind of interesting. We're going to get into some details there. And then we're going to, at the end, talk about how we think this could be done. And maybe we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, but if we get this opportunity in the sport, how this could be done and benefit the sport's health and everybody involved. So hang around for the whole thing. Let us know in the comments as you go sort of what you think about all this, and we'll get rolling. So first thing, Josh, I think it's worth maybe you articulating the number one thing I see the comparison to is pro sports and how people should be able to work and earn a wage for what they're worth. But maybe walk us through some of the really obvious and maybe not so obvious reasons why this is different and it makes this ripe for exploitation in college football.
As you said, the theme for a lot of this discussion for us is really about guardrails and structure. We're not against NIL, and I'm not against NIL generally. What I'm against is an NIL without any structure that's designed to make it operate in a positive manner. In pro sports, we have a lot of things that are designed to create parity and competition. We have a draft. We have salary caps. We have contracts tied to free agency. And what those things do is really takes away a lot of freedom of choice for the players. They don't have an option where they start out. They go to whoever drafts them. They're going to be paid based off slot in the NFL. And it's usually something similar in other sports. The teams that are drafting them have a salary cap, so there's only so many guys they can retain. When their contract ends, they enter free agency. There's a process for that. Even in free agency, they don't have total freedom to go where they want because you still have the salary cap issue. And in that regard, every team sort of gets everything sort of evenly distributed. That concept is important. And college has none of it. College football has open recruiting. And all college sports do. But particularly in college football, it is a depth-driven sport. So you've got 85 players, and they always talk about the quality of your team is really determined by your top 45 guys. It's not college basketball where two or three guys can make your whole squad. You need 40 players of high quality to be a championship-level program. And you're able to amass those players however you want to do it. I mean, the 2017 class from Alabama that ended up winning a couple titles, I think they had, eight first-round draft picks? I mean, it's just insane what came in that one crop. That has created a lack of parity already. But when you start talking NIL, when you start talking about how programs can maybe do things to mess around with how you bring players money, now you're straining those guardrails even more. And we've always, like with playoff expansion and a lot of other stuff, a lot of our sort of rhetoric is college football is inherently incompetitive. College football has a sort of problem or uniqueness to it to where the top teams are going to beat the lower ranked teams at a pretty good clip. But there are certain things, and it's usually like playing time, it's due to the fact that, you know, you have kids that want to go to their local program, that at least keep some semblance of parity in the sport or think cause things to change in a cyclical manner. But the more schools can leverage their money and resources, and the more schools in an expanded playoff that can keep themselves in the playoff race, the more they're going to stay at the top. And then I think the other thing, which I'll let you maybe pick up from here, is now there are a lot of changes with how the players can move themselves around, which takes that idea, that unique ability for players to freely choose in recruiting, and now amplifies it further to really do whatever they want to do and even transfer between schools freely.
Pro tip, y'all, as I get into my segment, this is the Kirkland brand, small batch that's they've just started rolling out at Costco. It's Barton's 1792, basically. It's really good, and it's like $20 in a lot of states. I think $30 in the Southeast, but it's really good. Anyway, hope that doesn't affect our monetization. Yeah, so for me, the thing that we keep talking about, what's funny, we get harassed online as being sort of shills for the top teams, when in reality, like, we follow the top teams the closest because those are the hardest ones to, like, nerd out over and pick apart. But we're actually, like, all of our warning signals and bell ringing is to protect the sport from the top teams. And so where everybody thinks that all of these things is going to create this democratization of the sport and spreading out talent evenly because it creates all these opportunities, the three things that we're doing right now, two we're already doing and one we're talking about doing, are all going to benefit the haves and hurt the have-nots. So instant transfers paired with being able to be recruited by these businesses and paid to transfer, and then expanding playoffs. All of these things are going to help Alabama. All these things are going to help Ohio State. Like, you expand the playoffs, 2015 Ohio State, 2010 Alabama, far more likely to win a national championship in a 12-team playoff than 2020 Cincinnati. So speaking of that 2020 Cincinnati, if they have a really good wide receiver and Ohio State's got one missing piece for their title run and they're looking at their roster coming up and it's May, they can start recruiting, and maybe the timeline's a little different in terms of rules, but they can start recruiting through their businesses, because we saw this with the Texas A&M deal and like everything in Miami that they're doing. Through these businesses, they can reach out to these top players and say, hey, come play here, and we'll give you X amount of dollars, and now basically bag men are legal. Is that person going to stay at Cincinnati? No, not only are they setting themselves up to get theirs because they're going to get high exposure and improve their draft stock, which is already enticement for them to go, which hurts the little guy, but now they're going to get paid while they do it, so they can maybe stay for 2 years and get super paid, where at Cincinnati they were probably guaranteed to stay 2 years because they need a little more, you know, exposure or whatever. I think this opens up the gate for all kinds of exploitation. And I know we talked about this before we got into it, but what else am I missing? Are there other things that this could be used for to exploit, or other ways that you see that this creates a wider gap between the haves and the have-nots?
Well, we're talking about teams, but I think part of the discussion has to be a little bit about players. A lot of the focus with NIL has been about the amount of money that some of these top players should or ought to get, especially the handful of them that have been injured. But I'm not sure enough attention is being paid to who is getting the money and who's not. I mean, the third string, you know, right guard is not going to get the same money that the starting quarterback's made. And like you talk about this top player that goes to the big program, you know, maybe he chases the money and he leaves Cincinnati for Ohio State in-state school. And like you're saying, you know, it's not even that Ohio State has to recruit him. The businesses are going to want him to be attached to Ohio State for exposure. And they're going to say, hey, if you were to transfer into the in-state school, I'd love to do a deal with you. And he's sitting there in the state of Ohio. There's going to be a lot of pressure for that. But, you know, what happens to the other kids at Cincinnati? They're not going to get the same deals and they're not going to get the same exposure. And that's going to cause the program to fall a little bit further behind. And even at Ohio State, the backups aren't going to get the same deals and exposure. And that's going to have a couple effects, I think. The first is, it's easy to say, well, those backups will transfer somewhere else where they get exposure. Sure, they're going to transfer from one name school to another. You're going to see maybe a little bit of shift in power with teams that are at the top. Miami, that $500,000 deal is an example. Brand name schools are going to be able to pull those deals. And maybe a school like Clemson that doesn't have quite the same base as Texas will start losing some influence to Texas, who can outspend them. But it's not going to help Cincinnati. And then for the players relative to those teams, you know, the guys at the top that are starting are going to make seven figures, you know, the Bryce Young numbers. And the guys that are second or third tier, the guys that probably need the money or are getting banged up, you know, which is the classic case of guys that sacrifice their body for the sport and then don't end up making it pro, they're not going to get NIL anyway. So the ones we're really enriching in the current system are the kids that are already going to get rich for the most part. And yeah, there've been some guys like, you know, there was a story with Dylan Moses who was, I think had, didn't go in the first round of the draft and he got some huge insurance payout. You know, he lost money, but he still had a safety net because they have insurance packages now for those guys at the top of the sport. It's the guys that are the backups, developmental players, and they're the ones that are going to never going to get NIL money, and then they're going to get hurt, and then they're still not going to get NIL money, and they're not going to go pro. It doesn't actually help them at all. And that draws me to something that I think both of us agree on. You know, however you feel... You know, this should not be a political discussion. I'm sure it's going to, some people will take it that way. There are times where regulation is a good thing, and there are times where unionization or collective bargaining is a good thing. And this is one of those examples. There's a reason the NFL Players Union exists. The NFL Players Union has, in recent years, driven down the money at the top of the NFL draft to the lower rounds of the NFL draft, such that everybody that goes in the NFL has a better shot to make a decent salary for a while, draw some savings, and it's not so much a lottery deal for the people at the top. College doesn't have that. And, you know, Daniel, maybe I'll let you take this a little bit, but we sort of created the exact opposite scenario by letting the players negotiate individually where there's no sort of collective negotiation or structure in place.
Yeah, and what has happened? We pushed this for a number of years, and to get the groundswell of support for this, we use the plight of the third string right guard. He's going to leave college basically used up by these programs, have nagging injuries, maybe have major injuries, maybe CTE concerns, and nobody cares about this guy after he's gone. And we've used his plight to get traction for this, but in reality, he's not the one that's benefited, as you said. The guy that's benefiting is the guy that's going to get rich anyway. And I'm still okay with the guy that's going to get rich anyway getting some of his now. I'm okay with that. The problem is there's no guardrails. The problem is the unintended consequences that are just obvious for anybody to see. The things that we're talking about here are obvious, and I think nobody wants to talk about it because it kind of rains on the parade a little bit. But this is the problem with the NCAA. Had they gotten out in front of this and said, and just read the tea leaves and said, this is going to happen, then they could have said, we want this to happen and we want to help you. We want to be a steward of this with you and make sure everybody's protected. And so we're going to have a clearinghouse. And this is what we talked about in our original video. And this is why I'm glad you let me get in a little bit of a segment, because I'm not the attorney and you are the attorney. So I'm going to let you kind of talk about the benefits that this has. But if you think about just in terms of collective bargaining, because everybody's familiar with that in pro sports, that's both sides working together, both sides giving a little bit until it's painful for the health of the sport. This is, as you say, the absolute opposite of that, where we have all of these rogue agents, because literally every business is a rogue agent. Imagine if the Steelers could recruit, like businesses could recruit in Pittsburgh to get the one missing piece out of Kansas City from the Chiefs for their Super Bowl run. That would be chaos. We can solve most of this with a clearinghouse slash collective bargaining, and I would love for you to just kind of tee that up and walk us through it. I teed it up. You walk us through it.
So we started this video by saying that we're not against NIL. We're against NIL without any guardrails or regulation. And this is where that starts to come full circle. If you're going to have name, image, likeness, one of the more important things in my view is that there is some level of equity to it. If you're the starting quarterback at Alabama and you have a set $7 million deal, it is probably at least somewhat the result of the brand that you're wearing and all the players around you that have made you successful. But in our current environment, the people that are acting are really the agents for the top. And I'll note, if you start to look at who's lobbying for a lot of NIL stuff or the people testifying, it's generally individual actors and it's agents for individual actors, people that represent people at the top of the sport, and their goal is to make their, the people that they're agents for as much money as possible. Collective bargaining operates in the opposite principle, right? You're representing the whole and you're trying to make everybody as well off as you can. And like I talk about with the draft, in general, when you start to have collective bargaining, they are going to want to make sure that everybody gets some floor of money or some floor of security. And I would rather that exist to make sure that third string right guard gets some money so that he can take care of his bills. You know, maybe a lot of these kids come from bad backgrounds. They can help with their family, whatever they need to do. They're, got a little bit of that safety net. The biggest way that could be done is some form of clearinghouse. Now, this could be the NCAA. It could be conference driven, whatever. But the idea would be, if you want to sign a given player to do an endorsement deal, you've got to go to the clearinghouse and say, hey, I want to do this. And they go, okay, and they'll clear it. And they've got attorneys and whatnot to help the players to make sure all the contracts are in order. And then they go to the player, you do the deal, the player gets some share of the money, and the rest of the money is actually pooled. So let's say the player gets 10, 15% of it. Then maybe another 60, 80% of the money is distributed to the other players at the school, and the remainder, maybe it's 5, 10%, that could be given to the program, it could be given to general scholarship funds, it can be given to probably a little bit, a few percent will have to be given to fund the clearinghouse. But the point is, those backup players that are making the team successful do get something out of it. And now if you're the one doing the deal, you get a decent chunk of it. Maybe you get 10 or 20%, which is not small change. But by distributing it, it makes sure everybody's doing well and everybody gets some money. But it also sets a guardrail because it's harder to just straight buy a kid. If I go from Cincinnati to Ohio State, I maybe increase my own personal share, but hopefully a decent chunk of your money is coming from this pooled amount. And so the shift isn't quite so drastic. And especially if you're looking at like one Power 5 program to another, right? Texas A&M to Texas or Alabama to Auburn. Those things kind of get evened out a little bit by that. And everybody does better as a result. So, I think, equity, fairness, and it's not even necessarily my stick to go into that too much. But in terms of just making sure all the players are taken care of, I think that's a far healthier thing. It's healthier for the teams. It's healthier in terms of creating guardrails so that players don't have this direct incentive to go to one school and people can't buy a player as directly, right? Because I got to spend $100,000 to this kid to get him 10. Well, that makes it a lot less of an incentive. And if I want to do these deals, I'm not doing them to buy the player. I'm doing them because I actually want them to do an advertisement for me, in which case I'm fine paying them $100,000. I don't care who gets it. I'll say the flip side, which we talked about before, it actually makes it easier to do licensing arrangements because if you're EA Sports and you want to do NCAA football, I am not going to sign, me as an attorney, I'm not going to get 10,000 signatures on 10,000 contracts with individual players. I want to have one contract with a collective bargaining agreement, agency, whatever, that they can then, say, okay, we represent everybody in this fold and we're all going to agree to it and this is the amount of money we're going to pay. And I say, fine, we've done the deal and it's done. And now those sorts of things can actually be accomplished in a reasonable manner. So I think the biggest step forward to correct a lot of this will be something like a clearinghouse, probably in partnership with something like collective bargaining, to where all the players are getting the benefit and it's not just the top quarterback at the expense of everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that's the number one thing in all this is with a clearinghouse, it takes 95% of the potential for exploitation off the table. Because theoretically then, and it eliminates the haves versus the have-nots. Because if you collectively bargain for all athletes, not just all football players, for all athletes, then whatever monetary benefit the businesses and the huge endowment that Texas or Texas A&M has over a Fresno State is really nullified. Like you said, if I've got to spend 100 grand to give a kid 10 grand, then I'm probably not going to do that. But it does allow me, as someone who might be willing to hustle a little harder to go out and get these endorsements, I get a little more for myself. I don't get so much more for myself that it tips the scales of where I go. And we say this about legitimate cheating. It's not legitimate, it's actual cheating. We say this about cheating all the time, have said it for years. Every school cheats. Even Northwestern cheats. Vanderbilt cheats. The issue is not that people cheat, that they don't have boosters given $100 handshakes. It's the difference is when you go far outside the bounds as an order of magnitude to land players, and you're cheating way more than everybody else, and it's giving you a competitive advantage. If everybody's given, let's say, $10,000 to every player that comes and plays for them under the table, then there's no competitive advantage for me to go to Mississippi State versus me to go to Oregon. I'm going to go to Oregon because their facilities are better. But anyway, if one school, hint, hint, Ole Miss, when they had, you know, they were 7-5 and a bunch of players were signing there that never visited five-star city, they were paying people by the boatloads. Reggie Bush was paid that's a competitive advantage when it's so outside the bounds of what's normal. And with collective bargaining in NIL, it kind of eliminates that. And it also means that players don't have their hand out. That's a huge thing that nobody's talking about, is if you level all this and they get money in their pocket, they don't have their hand out. So it actually eliminates a lot of the dirty dealing in college football. But if I'm the backup right guard and I'm not going to get an NIL deal like Bryce Young, then I might be willing to put my program at risk and myself at risk by doing a deal under the table, which is still technically illegal. We've gone a little bit longer than we expected, but I've really enjoyed this discussion. Why don't you wrap this up with final thoughts of one, maybe just final thoughts in general about NIL, and two, is the genie out of the bottle, or do you think at some point we can get to some sort of clearinghouse so it's not the Wild West?
First, let's talk about what NIL isn't. A lot of people have talked about Reggie Bush and giving him back the Heisman as an NIL thing. Guys, understand, what Reggie Bush did had nothing to do with NIL, okay? He took a $500,000 advance from a sports agent to sign as an agent for when he was a pro player, and that's a... It's considered a violation of amateur rules, but he essentially became a pro athlete because he signed with an agent and he took illicit loans.
And it's still illegal.
It's still illegal. And in fact, that's actually not just illegal currently under NCAA rules. It survived the Supreme Court ruling. It's also actually criminally illegal in most states that have major programs to sign with a sports agent early. It's a similar deal. I could go into it, but it has to do with a lot of amateur sports and even some Olympic stuff. But that's not an NIL issue. So, don't talk about Reggie Bush. It has nothing to do with this. He took money for a completely different reason. And taking money for those reasons it's not NIL. But I do think... I think we're going to have the Wild West for a couple of years, and one of two things is going to happen. Either stuff's going to kind of implode before it can be fixed, or it's quite possible that we're going to see some real rules and regulations. The states passed laws that took effect in July, trying to force the NCAA's hand, thinking that when they passed those laws, and they had 2-year gaps for some of them, like Florida, the NCAA was just going to be forced to put some sort of reasonable regulation in place. You know, the state of Georgia, when they passed a regulation, they actually stipulated how much pooled money can be put into a clearinghouse in their regulation. Now, it kind of weirdly backfired because people don't quite understand how to read law sometimes. It didn't say the money had to be pooled. What it actually did was it capped the amount of money that could be pooled. It was a limit on pooling. It was not encouraging pooling, if that makes sense. Somehow, you know, if I pass a law that says you can only do so much of X, the fact that I wrote a law about X to a lot of people means, well, you said I can only do so much about X. That means you're encouraging me to do X. And that's not what it is. It's the exact opposite. But the NCAA just didn't do any of it. They didn't actually manage to pass any regulation before the laws took effect. And it put us into this complete Wild West scenario. So my hope is in the next year or two, some things are probably going to go really off the rails really, really fast is my prediction. And there's going to be some sort of guidance or clarification or limits put forward by the NCAA or even possibly Congress. And if not, you know, we'll see. Does it have a long-term negative effect that's damaging to the sport? Does it have no effect at all and not matter? You know, we don't know. But I will say this. There is absolutely no precedent for a sport with no draft, no salary cap, free transfers, and the ability to funnel player to monies to or funnel money to players to go wherever they want to go. Don't draw any analogy and say it worked in this pro sport or it worked in this other sport. The situation we're in today in college football and, you know, college basketball as well is completely unique. No one knows how it's going to turn out. Nobody knows what the positives or negatives are. And the NCAA, Congress, schools, and players, along with us, are all finding it out at the same time. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine as how it'll turn out, but I do wish we had more controls so that it wasn't going to be such a blind entrance into a future that nobody knows what the impact will be.
Yeah, we're so hyper-focused on the one positive aspect, which is a legitimate positive, that we are not just not considering unintended consequences. Anytime somebody like us brings them up, like, hey, y'all, this is going to benefit Alabama and Texas more. It's like, shut up. You don't want, you know, players to earn anything. You want them to be miserable. It's not the case at all. And so we are just worried because we think the health of the sport does mean the rich not getting richer. And what I'm hoping is that things get bad so fast that they can quickly forces them to put guardrails in instead of this gradual kind of boiling frog thing where we wake up one morning and like Alabama and Clemson are winning the national championship every year. They have all the best players, which you joke about being the case now. It comes and goes in waves. And the haves are so far removed from the have-nots in every conceivable way that it's irreparable. So let us know in the comments what you think. Please remember, we are not against players getting some money. We are against the Wild West. Give us some ideas about how you think we could protect the sport, or maybe that we're being chicken littles and there's nothing to be worried about. All opinions are welcome as long as you bring data to the conversation and you're respectful about it. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week. God bless, and it is great to be back.